welcome to Food Stuff. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And no, your eyes do not deceive you, or ears as the case may be. This is a special bonus episode.
It is. It's a Food Stuff first. And I have two things I want to confess, if we can get a little personal here for a second.
Sure.
Can I trust you?
I think so.
Okay. One, I'm very self-conscious about my name.
You are?
Yeah. So every time when we do the intro, it's a battle for me.
To say your name.
Yes.
But it's a good name. It has a good rhythm to it. Like it's,
thank you.
It's sort of roll. I mean, you know, it's nice.
It's because it's spelled differently.
Oh.
So my whole life people have asked, are you sure? Like, yeah. So I sort of say it with a question. Okay. I'm working on it. The second thing is.
Oh, okay.
I have a background in editing and video production. And you have more of a background in writing,
sure.
That kind of editing. Therefore, when you listen to this special, special bonus content, you're going to hear a lot more of Lauren asking questions.
Oh.
And a lot more of me laughing awkwardly in the background.
Oh, no, I don't think, I mean, I guess that is sort of how it played out, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, when we look behind the scenes. Okay, so this is going to be the continuation of our salt interview.
Yes.
With a beautiful briny sea owner and salt expert.
Lovely human being,
Susie Sheffield. Oh, and we wanted to mention that this episode was not sponsored by Beautiful Briny Sea. We just dig their work, and so we wanted to talk with them. Yeah, and when we're out in the field, frequently I'm the one who's kind of drafted the questions, and I'm the one who kind of asks most of the questions right up until I get to a point where I get this blank look at my face, and I turn to Annie with, I just go like ah!
Pretty much. There's a lot of hand gestures that are happening you can't see. That,
yeah, yeah, it's really good for radio.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for sticking with us, guys. But yeah. So at that point, Annie kicks in and asks really brilliant things that,
well, thank
that
you.
I haven't thought. No, it's a great relationship.
Thank you. And we had our salt. I agree. We had our salt episode, and there was just so much good content in the interview, and we were indecisive, and we couldn't decide what to cut it out, and we decided to just put it all in a bonus episode.
Yeah.
And hopefully you guys will enjoy it as much as we did. We had a great time visiting, and we're going to be back. We're going to make our own
salt blend.
We're so excited about
yeah.
it. Do you have ideas of what it should be?
Right.
We were going to try to combine all of our episodes, but then we decided that'd be gross.
That'd be pretty chaotic and bad, so.
That could be our blend, though. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, chaotic and bad.
Chaotic and interesting.
Oh, there you go.
Yes.
Chaotic, interesting. That's our new alignment. Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So we're gonna get to the interview. All right. So hi. Who are you?
Susie Sheffield. I have a company called Beautiful Briny Sea in Atlanta's historic Grant Park.
Oh yeah.
And you guys produce a whole bunch of salt blends and sugar blends and
yes.
sprinkles. And
yes. Dry goods is the way I like to think of it. So I've always been involved in food. I had a restaurant for 17 years. And when I moved back to Atlanta, my hometown, I knew I didn't want to have a restaurant. And I tried to think of the most shelf-stable venture where I could still work with fresh ingredients and farmers and local markets. And so salt seemed to be a perfect starting point. And it's actually become a palate to me. So a way to kind of express things and evoke flavors that I want or create items that kind of tell a story. So
I'm like slightly salt overwhelmed right now. we're sitting here in front of a spread of, it looks like you've got four salt blends and I can't count, six types?
Six. We bring in, it's sort of like a laboratory back there, any type of salt. Anything that I read about, anything that I find, you know, we just kind of bring it in, figure out its, where it hits on a salt scale and then what its finish is. So, but we use the salt that I use in all of our blends. It's an Atlantic Ocean salt. The water's harvested off the coast of Brazil. It's solar evaporated. And I like it because it's slightly salt forward, but it has an immaculately clean finish. So it just picks up anything you blend with it. So,
oh, wow. Yeah, for like a good like neutral salt, but there are all kinds of other different. I mean, you're talking about salt in a way that I don't think I've ever heard anyone speak with flavor profiles. And
salt is just. I mean, like wine, it imparts the flavor of the lay of the land that it's surrounded in. Salt, all salt does come from seawater. It all comes from the ocean, but you have to understand, like, some oceans are ancient and are just like big rock beds now. So the Pink Himalayan, for example, and the Bolivian salt, those are just harvested from ancient, ancient oceans. We have surface oceans, the water that we see now. That's where you get that large variety, like your Malden salt, all the flake salts you see. There is one interesting company, Dickinson in West Virginia. They have an ancient ocean underground, and they actually like pipe it in and then solar evaporate it. But it's fascinating. So that's one company that's really interesting to read. Just like, and the Jacobson Salt Company, he's gathering water from the Pacific Northwest in Oregon, and then he kettle boils it, which it's fascinating. It makes these beautiful flakes.
I'm curious about how the harvesting works. How do you? I mean, are you growing your own crystals and then packing them?
Yes. They're different processes. Like they're mined salts, which, you know, you were getting the mineral deposit from an ancient ocean and at the bottom of a mountain or inside a mountain. It's truly mined. Then you have some of these flake salts, gathering the seawater and putting it on trays and then solar evaporating it. There are techniques where you gather the seawater, you let it settle, and then boil it. So if in old texts, you can see big cauldrons of boiling water, and at the end, the residue, your byproduct, is your salt. So,
and the size of the grains is fascinating to me and has so much to do with how it dissolves in your food or in your mouth. How does that go into your process of figuring out what to do with stuff?
Well, I prefer a kosher-sized grain. It's just the way I've learned to cook, and I think a lot of people do. Fine salt, is great for finishing. And some of the small, like a fleur de sel or like the selgree here, they're naturally like a finer grain. They're softer, and they hold a lot of moisture. With our truffle salt, we use a fleur de sel for that reason. It's just the moisture kind of traps that really distinct, really strong flavor of the mushroom. But then your flake salts, that's what's really wonderful about cooking with them. You just grab it and you can break it into the size grain that you like. And some naturally, like some of these, especially the two Hawaiians, some will naturally just break into like a kosher size, if you will, grain. And some, like I was saying, are more sugary, more sandy. But the flake salt's really fun to work with. It's hard to, and actually great with cocktails too, because they'll kind of float and then and dissolve a little. So you have sort of this layer of, and sometimes, you know, you do want that crunch of salt when you're cooking, you know, you want it as a finishing, but somewhere throughout the meal, you're like, oh, hello, you know, and so that's pleasant. Yeah. So that's great to work with, the flake salts for that reason. So you were asking earlier, like how each salt is distinct and different. Uh-huh. Just think of like a wine region or why, you know, like if you are eating a goat cheese, where the goats have been eating alfalfa and clover and lavender, those things come through. So these dried up, if you can imagine like how rich and dense, like these mine salts where the ocean and all the fossils. And I mean, so it's really fascinating just how each one distinctly tastes different.
Why sea salt rather than manufactured salt?
I mean, not that it's not manufactured, I suppose. It's just so pure and so clean and has such a distinct personality. And salt is used for many things and has been since the beginning of time. For one, you know, it's a preservative. It's you know, not to be confused, it's not like a seasoning. It's actually a flavor enhancer. I like to think of it in two forms, like a flavor enhancer, but also a flavor moderator. Like if you think of the human body, our sodium potassium pump keeps every function and every organ and every system in check. So just like if you have like a dish and you're trying to, you know, figure it out, or if it's a little too acidic or a little too sweet, or if it's bitter, or if all the ingredients are in there proportionately, but it's just not working, salt just transforms that, makes things happen. It pulls things together. And as far as being a flavor enhancer, think of like the best summer tomato. And when you take a bite, it's like equal parts sweet and acidic. And it's just fabulous. And if you put a little bit of salt on it, it's that much more fabulous. But it doesn't change the way it tastes. It just makes it a little bit better. So
And how do you work with that when you're creating these blends?
Well, the reason, like I was saying, the reason that I chose this Atlantic, the Brazilian ocean salt, for one, it naturally breaks into this sort of kosher size grain. Its flavor, there's a little punch of salt up front, but then after that, it's super clean. So I always know where it's going to hit. So it's just like a blank canvas. Every time I kind of want to tell a story, or every time I want to create a blend, I know exactly what my baseline is. So,
could you talk about the blends that we have here today?
Sure. When I first started the company, it was rosemary, lavender, mushroom, and pink peppercorn. Those are my four flavors. It's just super basic. But then one day I thought, you know what, I'm just going to try and make a blend. So without even thinking, I just kind of came up with this first flavor that you see here. And I was like, you know what, this is my first blend. It's going to have a fabulous name. And I woke up one morning, it's like, okay, magic unicorn. So for no reason, but it's smoked paprika, garlic, rosemary, Meyer lemon, and a little celery. And it's just sort of an all-purpose flavoring with the sea salt. And the great thing, you know, the salt preserves the herbs and spices infuse the salt. And then once I started playing around and getting more ingredients in the studio, and I decided to start kind of going on food memories or food stories or my favorite things that I like to eat and kind of recreating it through the salt. So French picnic is kind of everything I like. Like once I was asked to describe my cooking style, and just out came French picnic because I love the sort of discipline of a French kitchen. But then the idea of a picnic and just the whimsy and the creativity behind just preparing this meal. So think charcuterie, grain mustard, which I just love any kind of mustard. Fresh herbs, of course, always. So this is Dijon mustard, garlic, herb de Provence, some pink peppercorn. And it just has that sort of tang from the mustard. The garlic is there. And then the herbs are subtle. You can tell each one, but at the same time, you can't. So it's one of my favorites to work with. And then this is called Campfire. And I grew up every summer, we would spend in Western North Carolina. I went to camp there all my life, and we'd go camping, and my parents had a house. And so, I mean, since literally, like, I was probably 3 years old, that part of Western North Carolina, the ancient Appalachian Mountains, and there are certain, like, the smells, especially because of the hemlock forest there, it has a distinct smell. And so I wanted to create this flavor. It's got cumin, so that's kind of earthy, like the forest floor. It's got sumac, which is that sour note in there from just reminiscent of like blackberry picking. It's got chilies, just sort of like the campfire. So, and it surprisingly, like with the sumac and the cumin, which sometimes a little cumin for me goes a long way, but I'm okay with it in there because all of those flavors kind of work together. So, and then the Sultan Papadopoulos. It's a lemon curry base. But I wanted to pack it full of, like, the Erfurum Arash chili, lots of dill, lots of lemon. And so, you know, the Aegean Sea, Greece, and Turkey. And I was like, well, how do I celebrate both countries? So, therefore, Sultan Papadopoulos. So, and that's been fun to play with. I think curry kind of gets a bad rap. It's sort of when you think curry, you're like, oh, you know, curry is curry. But it's actually so versatile, and you can sneak it into recipes, and it's without it being so curry forward. So I'd like that one for this reason. So
this is slightly off the topic of salt, yep. So you're talking about working with scent memories and stuff like that. Can I ask if you have any foods that you're just completely nostalgic for?
I can answer that in two parts. One, there's some foods that I absolutely don't want to know how to cook. I just don't want to. I love the first food memory I ever have was my dad took me, I think when I was 4 or 5 years old. The neighbors 3 doors down had a Chinese restaurant in Atlanta. It was called Ing's Garden. And the Ing's, I mean, the whole family worked there. And I had never had a water chestnut, and I first bit into water. So Chinese, but I would encompass all of Asian cooking, has always been sort of off limits to me because I don't want to know the secrets. It's like magical, and you know, of course, throughout my career, like I've you know played around with it a little bit, but to me, that's just sort of someplace I don't want to go. And all the flavors, like it took me for I. Finally started, you know, playing around with five spice and had to start making my own. But for a while, I was like, I don't want to know all of these magical secrets. But as far as food memories, I grew up with a great mom cook. My mom just made just like great, simple, basic things. And, you know, in the summer, I think anything over rice, like stewed tomatoes, okra, corn, peas, all these kind of simple late summer southern dishes. That's one sort of comfort food to me always. I love anything with anything that can have a vinaigrette or a little bit of acid to it, any sort of dish. I love all this fermentation happening now and like the sourness of foods and like with, you know, sour beers even, which actually the Wrecking Bar here in town, they come over. They found this, speaking of like different salts and different flavors, they came in and it took them literally like 10 minutes to figure out what they wanted. They tasted all of these salts. So they took three and blended it together, and that's what they used to make their goza. And the salinity, and you can tell exactly what they were going for. And they were, I mean, beer nerding it up big time, but they were great salt nerds. Like, they did a great job. They just went boom, 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 blended it, got the portions just right. And so they come over with, you know, we have an open door policy here with all the chefs and bar programs. But they walked right in and knew exactly what they wanted and did it after just tasting 1 second. So sorry to get off topic, but that's how I go.
No, not at all. But no, that's great. That's,
yeah. So.
Is there a lot of experimenting that goes on? How do you work out, like, the ratios and blends and stuff like that?
Well, I'm a terrible – this is why you will never want me to bake anything for you. I'm a terrible, terrible measurer. I just come in and kind of make it up as I go along. Well, then, of course, having the company kind of have to have a little structure. But so for all of these flavors, like, everyone has its different story about how it was created. Like, I was either craving a flavor and wanting to create a food memory – or there's a happy accident, but mostly like Magic Unicorn, first try, got it, wrote everything down. French Picnic, it took months. I would throw it out, try something, oh, too much lavender, oh, wait, pink peppercorn, but I don't want the texture, so, you know, and I want the sweetness of the pink peppercorn. I don't want the pepper to even translate, you know, but I do like that color, and I do like that after sweetness, especially the pink peppercorn. And I was trying to find a way for a while, like, how to take all the skin off the peppercorn, and I actually found a way. So we like sit and like scrape all the skin off, so you have that residual sweetness, but you don't have like the pepper competing with the salt. So, and I totally already forgot what you asked. So sorry.
Oh, no.
oh, the recipes. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's sort of like, you know, shoes. Like, you buy shoes, and then you get an outfit to go with it later. You have an outfit, and you need to find shoes. So it's just sort of like, you know, what's next? And if I let a flavor go, then I'll have to think of the next flavor that I want. But what's been really interesting and one of the most exciting and unexpected parts about this are our collaborations. And one of the very first was there's a wonderful store in New York City called Fish's Eddie. And it's on the Broadway and 16th, I think. But Julie, the owner, I was at a trade show, my first trade show, so I was all buttoned up and trying to be extra on the ball, and she's like seasoned retail wizard. So she kind of was circling the booth, and then she walked up to me and she said, so do you do, can you make special blends? Do you do custom orders? And I was like, sure, you know, never having done one before. And she said, okay, well, I need a salt that's New York and I need a salt that's Jewish. Can you make me... and I said, yes, of course. And so that's where we came up with the Everything Bagel Salt. Then I'm trying to think. People call all the time, like, and just wanting, like, can you do this, can you do that? And if the answer is either yes, of course, or I don't know, come on in and let's figure out. We've started partnering with Delta, and their executive chef came in yesterday, and he just had this long list of words like Spanish, things like umami. Or so we would just sit and like make these flavors. So he left with about 14 different blends. Paul Calvert at Ticonderoga Club, a couple of months ago, he was working on a cocktail, and he said, can you make me a kefir lime salt? And I was like, sure. But then my next steps are like, you know, do you want a flake salt? Do you want it to sink? Do you want it to garnish? Do you want it to garnish the outside of the glass? So there are these fun, like, little formulas, like, but you really literally make it up as you go along. So I send him three samples. I was like, do you want it to be, you know, a sweet finish? Do you want a, you know, punch in the face finish? You know, and so we kind of had the conversation back and forth, and I made him three samples, and he picked the one he liked. So it's always fun. So that's what I'm saying. The salt is just this perfect canvas to play with. And, but it, as far as, like, nailing like a formula or something. I just say it's sort of like you would, I guess, you know, with artists, like there's always unfinished work, or, you know, you like when people come in, we have people come in and make their own blends all the time. And my first rule is like, do not try to rescue what you're making. Like if you don't like it, like please dump it out. Like there's no sense. And so that's always fun. But people make some great stuff, like really great stuff, and just out of nowhere. So.
Yeah, you've got a lot of crazy ingredients back there.
Yeah,
this might be a big ask off the top of your head. Could you just like list off like what you've got back there? Like what are you playing with in your palettes?
I mean, it's constantly like evolving. It's sort of like going through someone's drawer. If you reach like behind, like of course we have all the alliums up front, but then if you reach behind, we have cedar tips, and then so it's sort of like going through somebody's kitchen cabinet, which I invite everyone to. Please come over at any time. We have an open door policy. It's more fun that way. Like, just you get inspiration from anything. Like, and I'll call or get online or look through catalogs and source. I need some of that, or like the long pepper, which is like multiple personality disorder. Like I'm still trying to figure out how to work with that one. It's like sour and then it's hot and then it goes away and then it comes back to get you. And so, you know, so we have tons of little jars of things like that. Terry Koval at the Wrecking Bar brought us, he smoked some beets and then dehydrated them. So we have dehydrated smoked beets. So you can imagine the smokiness, and then you're like, awesome. Oh, whoa, hello, sweet. And then, you know, so, and then the tips were still on them. So there's that green herbaceous. So it's like all sorts of things. So anything and everything is back there. And people bring us stuff all the time. We have service berries growing out front. So once those are ready, I'm going to dry some. We'll see what that's like. So every day something different, which is great. That's why I love this palette that salt provides. So.
That's fun.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
I know, right?
How many blends have you made? Do you know?
We have 14 blends that we make. Mm-hmm. We have about 7 or 8 collaborations with one of our biggest partners. And I say partnered in the truest sense because we just have such a great working relationship, is Williams Sonoma, which all of these partnerships happened totally organically. Like, we're a tiny company. Williams Sonoma, I was here at 8 o'clock one night, and I got an email from this girl who saw something about a farmer's market post, and she said, oh, would you mind sending samples? I was like, yes, big fancy company. And so I ran to FedEx because it was an 8:30 cutoff, and I dropped in the mail, and then Ponce City Market opened, and our salt ended up there. And now we have close to 20 SKUs with them. But when I say they're wonderful to work with, is because they're just like, can you do this? Like let's have a conversation about this. And what they like to do with all of their products, everything kind of tells a story. So like one time I even got an email saying, can you do some Portland stuff? And I was like, okay. So you just kind of, it's just this fun conversation you have with yourself, you have with each other, you have with yourself, with your food memories or your travel memories. So, and then Delta, you know, since they're located here, we had this woman call us because she saw she called the 1-800 number, and then she looked at the can and was like, oh, you're in Atlanta. She had gotten a can of our Friends Forever, which is, I forgot to bring that out. We should have brought Friends Forever out. That's a fun story. She came and she's like, oh, I see you're in Atlanta. Do you mind if I swing by? So she came in like her workout clothes and walked in, and then when she was in the back, she's like, so I work for Delta. We do all their Sky Club experiences. Like, do you guys mind coming and bringing lunch Friday and telling us your story? And so, yes, and we did. And so now we're partnering with them to make all these really cool flavors for their Sky Club. So, like I said, the guy came in the other day, and we had a great time just making up. I mean, he left with sacks of ideas, so.
Friends Forever is the one that's honey and salt,
honey.
Right? And how do you do the honey granules?
Well, so it's spun honey that's been dehydrated and then it's ground out. And I did not make it for myself. I made it for my sweetheart who loves sweet and savory, and I want those two as far apart as possible. So it's called Friends Forever, and it's honey and salt. It's like hugs and tears, and you know, so but yeah, it's my least favorite, I'm not afraid to say, but it's a lot of people's favorite. So very simple. It's simple. You know, I mean, just the history of salt itself is fascinating. I mean, salt wars, a million bazillion literary references in salt. Just the whole salt trade in general, currency, salt as a form of currency. It's just fascinating. I encourage anyone to study it. I mean, in basic, the basic form of human life, salt. So, and I, people can spout, literary references and ancient things. But my favorite, especially for what I do for a living, is R.W. Apple Jr. He was the travel and food critic for the Times forever. For a contemporary quote, without salt, life would be impossible. Without pepper, life would be impossibly dull. And I've always loved that.
I agree.
Thank you again, Susie of Beautiful Briny Sea, for sitting down with us and inviting us into your amazing kitchens.
Yes, and for giving us samples. I've been putting the sprinkles, which are supposed to be shared, but they're sitting at my desk, in my yogurt all week, and it's been lovely. And I've been using the salt. We'll definitely be back. And I just really appreciated hearing salt spoken about in that way. Really, really cool.
It was a whole new salty world.
Yeah. So we hope that you enjoyed that special super food stuff bonus.
Yeah.
Hopefully more will come your way.
Indeed. Yeah, let us know what you think. You can get in touch with us.
Yes. Our email is foodstuff@howstuffworks.com.
We're also on social media. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at foodstuffhsw and on Instagram at foodstuff. We hope to hear from you. Thank you so much to our amazing producer, Dylan Fagan.
Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.